Yankin Zhao v. Mukasey. Mr. Moslemi?
Yes, Judge. May it please the Court, my name is Troy Nader Moslemi, and the clerk asked me to ask if I could reserve 2 minutes for a rebutting argument. Your Honors, this case involves two Chinese individuals who entered the United States in the Florida area between the years of 2001 and 2003. In the husband's case, he entered in 2001. I believe it was, if you look towards either the IJ's opinion or toward the record, he entered somewhere possibly in the Jacksonville area, as it appears that's where he was apprehended. In the wife's case, she entered in 2003 at Miami International Airport. Both individuals filed for asylum. The husband filed for asylum, admittedly, untimely. In the wife's case, she did file timely. The wife's case, the husband's case appears to ask for asylum based on Chinese coercive population control program pursuant to the definition of a refugee in 1101A42. The wife asked for asylum based on two things, coercive population control program and on her practice of the spiritual movement in China known as Falun Gong. The government admits in their own brief that this is a pre-Real ID Act case to follow the correct focus, which means that, of course, on post-Real ID Act cases, any inconsistency whatsoever can lead to an adverse credibility determination that will in most likelihood doom the claim. Whereas in pre-Real ID Act cases, the inconsistency has to go to the heart of the matter. The husband's case, due to activities that happened after they entered, specifically matter of JS and the Lin versus U.S. Department of Justice case that precipitated that from the Second Circuit, wound up with only a derivative claim as the case law now stands, only a female may claim coercive family planning. The husband may claim it, but only if he has engaged in some form of other resistance. In this particular case, the immigration judge found the both of them as a consolidated case not to be credible. He lists specific reasons for finding the coercive population control program not to be credible. But what becomes curious is he also finds the Falun Gong claim not to be credible, but he makes a very short statement as to why that is. And the reason he gives is solely because of the testimony about the course of population control program activities that the couples experienced. I'm not sure
I think he looked at it and said, man, just lying about the family planning issue, that's a kind of an afterthought because she never mentioned it to anybody before.
But, Your Honor,
she finds out her sister got asylum for under that claim.
But, Your Honor, that would be perfectly sufficient for a post-Real ID Act credibility determination, or anything at all will result in an adverse credibility determination. In a pre-Real ID Act case, the adverse credibility determination has to go to the heart of the claim. Sure, inconsistencies regarding coercive family planning go to the heart of a coercive family planning claim. Does an inconsistency regarding a family planning game go to the heart of a Falun Gong claim? I am not so sure.
Well, there's an old jury instruction on credibility that says if you lie about one thing, the jury can conclude that you lied about other things.
That is how post-Real ID Act cases operate. And basically, if a person
post or pre, that's a long-standing rule in courts. It's falsus in uno.
I understand, but there are cases that state that a person who is inconsistent about things that do not go to the heart of the matter, that those bases are not a sufficient basis to base an adverse credibility determination on. Those cases are there. Let me move on to this. There's also an issue regarding withholding of removal. The government has argued in their brief, and the board has stated in their decision, that the parties did not sufficiently exhaust their remedies regarding the withholding of removal and the CAT claim because they failed to mention that in their brief to the board. However, if you look at the immigration judge's decision regarding withholding of removal, it simply states, for the foregoing reasons. In other words, it states that the reason he denies withholding is absolutely nothing different than the claim regarding asylum based on coercive family planning and on Falun Gong. The brief to the board talks about the argues that the judge's credibility determination is wrong. The brief before this court argues the same matter. So simply what they're being punished for regarding exhaustion is that they did not put some kind of summary paragraph, from the way I can read it, that says that we also readopt these arguments regarding the withholding claim. I'm not sure what specifically the government would ask them to argue in addition to what they've already argued, because the basis for denying withholding is exactly the same as the basis for denying asylum. There is one other issue in this case, and that is the government makes much of the fact that how could they have received a fine notice on the same day or shortly after an abortion had happened? The government cites in its own brief Huang versus Gonzalez, 453 F3rd 942, 7th Circuit 2006, which rejected a similar argument made by a government attorney at that time. One further problem with this particular case is that the immigration judge in this case says that the record material, the Department of State report, says that it is, he claims that the record supports that it is unlikely that a person would be persecuted based on felony ongoing activities in the future based on the fact that their name may have been leaked to authorities. However, 8 CFR 28.13 says that the immigration judge shall not require an applicant to provide evidence that there is a possibility that they would be singled out individually if they can establish a pattern and practice that the government persecutes that kind of person.
I missed your previous point about she's getting an abortion in one place and he's complaining in another.
What the government, there's a number of things that the immigration judge lists regarding the course of family, family planning claim. One of them is that he believes that it would be implausible for them to receive I believe it's a fine notice, either the same day or shortly after the abortion takes place. However, if you look at the case I had cited, the case says that there's a similar situation in that case where it says that they're arguing about how would the government possibly know so quickly that she'd become pregnant, and that is based on speculation. This is also based on speculation.
What case is that?
The government cites Huang, H-U-A-N-G, versus Gonzalez, 453, F3rd, 942. You're looking specifically pinpointed at page 945. And
what's the volume?
453 of F3rd. And for those who follow head notes, I know everyone knows the danger in that. It's under head note number 4. Now, they cite that case for a different proposition. They cite this case for the proposition that someone who comes up with an abortion certificate is inconsistent with the fact that they have submitted to an involuntary abortion. I've argued in front of other circuits that I'm not sure that the State Department report it rules that out, but Your Honors have decided in Huang, and that is the law as it is. So certainly under Huang, it does appear that that may in fact be an inconsistency.
Now, does she have a second child now?
Yes, Judge, she does. She was pregnant at the time that briefing had happened.
She has
had the child, but I didn't feel I could really speak with that with Your Honors because it's not a matter of record. It is a matter of record. She's pregnant.
Her first child.
And now she has a second, yes, Judge.
She has two children. She has two.
That's where are the petitioners?
Where are the petitioners right now?
Yeah.
Where do they live?
Yeah.
In my understanding that they both live in New York.
How did this case come to the Seventh Circuit?
Well, they both started in Florida. I'm not sure where the husband's case actually started. I know he's apprehended in Jacksonville. I know the wife enters MIA, and that she winds up in the Florida court system. In fact, there is a transfer of venue by a judge named Pedro Miranda, who I'm a Miami practitioner. I've appeared in front of him many times. He transferred venue, I believe, to New York. In fact, I think at one point both cases were in New York. At one point they're consolidated, and at one point they're both transferred here. They were boyfriend and girlfriend.
What's the reason for the transfer here?
I did a move and a change of residence here. They had gotten married here.
It was their request.
Yes, that's correct. It was their request.
I appreciate that, but are they situated here? They just requested that it be transferred for
based on an address here, yes.
And they're still in New York, but they want an adjudication by an IJ in
this area. They lived here at that time
in Chicago.
In Chicago. That's correct. Or in the Chicago area. Now, before it got here, it was in New York, and they had requested that change from Florida based on a residence up there. I don't go to their homes. I don't know where they live, but it's my understanding that they live in New York. Is it record material? No, not really. But
If she has two children, doesn't she have another ground for resisting being sent back to China?
She may very well. It depends on whether the record would support that based on American-born children. There is an awful lot of controversy in the circuits right now based on whether the birth of one American child or two American children would lead to a well-founded fear and whether the evidence would be sufficient to provide that well-founded fear to the individuals.
So would, if we were to affirm the removal order, would she then file a motion to reopen? Is that what would
you know, Judge, I don't know what clients would do. I don't know whether they would ask me to do it, some other attorney to do it. I don't know. But under my understanding of the law, they would not have a claim because there are, most of the circuits I've seen are claiming American-born children provide a speculative form of a well-founded fear. I'm not sure that that would be a well-taken motion.
A case recently in which we assumed that there was a well-founded fear because there was a strange, maybe it was not authentic, but there was some strange ruling by a village council in China which said that if you go abroad and have children, if you get a graduate degree abroad, then fine, keep the kids and come back to China. But if you don't, those children count against the one-child policy, and you'll be fined.
Well,
it might be a heavy fine.
Judge, again, if you had mentioned that, I think Your Honor had mentioned that it was a local rule, and of course, you know, it seems that individuals from China, when they file these motions to reopen, many times they include local rules and translations of them that many times immigration judges have never seen before. I know many judges have made a vast difference between individuals who, for instance, have their children here and have them as U.S. citizens, whether they send them back and register them as permanent residents of China versus whether they're citizens of China. It's become quite a labyrinth, actually, within the last
year. Let me ask you just one more question. The sister who came to the United States and was given asylum, so she had an involuntary abortion?
That's correct, Judge.
In China,
the immigration judge uses that as a basis to disbelieve her statement that the reason she didn't say at the airport that she had suffered a CFP issue and only talked about Falun Gong was because she had said she was embarrassed about having a child out of wedlock. And the immigration judge says, well, but her sister claimed political asylum based on course of family planning. I had a really hard time understanding why that would diminish someone's own personal embarrassment. One person is different from their sister, different from their husband.
Was the sister in the same situation, that is, she had the involuntary abortion because she wasn't married?
Judge, it is not of record. I do not know, and I did not represent that individual. And I didn't represent these individuals either, but I've read the...
Did the BIA rely on that?
I have a bit of a trouble with the government's argument regarding this, too, because the government claims that the BIA has written a completely separate decision from the IJ, but that didn't happen. To look at the last paragraph on page 2, it says they support the inconsistencies, for example. They use the words for example, meaning that they have not distanced themselves from the IJ's decision. When you use the words for example, that means that they're simply highlighting certain points of the immigration judge's conclusions, but they are adopting it. It's not a completely separate decision, so I'm not sure one could support that. But the they mentioned omission from the credible fear interview and arrival statement that she had a boyfriend or forced abortion, even though she had a boyfriend in the United States. The government makes much of she didn't list a boyfriend. Last time I looked at a 589, there is no boyfriend slot to write the name of your boyfriend on your I-589. It's not there. So I'm not sure how that could be used as a basis of disbelief.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Muslimi.
Okay. I'll reserve the remaining 2 minutes for rebuttal.
So, let's see. Ms. Meyer? Mr. Meyer. Sorry.
Jeffrey Meyer for the respondent, Your Honor. May it please the Court. In this asylum case, the lead petitioner has been afforded the opportunity to present her claim in her statement to the immigration officer at the airport, at her credible fear interview with an asylum officer, at a hearing before an immigration judge, and in her proceeding before the Board of Immigration Appeals. Petitioner had the opportunity to present testimony, witnesses, and documentary evidence. Yeah, the
I don't understand the immigration judge's discussion of Falun Gong. When he says, I'm looking at page 18 of his opinion, while the report does show that practitioners of Falun Gong have been arrested in the past in China and still face possible harm of arrest in the future, the likelihood of the respondent being arrested appears to be minimal at best. Why? They know that she's does Falun Gong. Chinese government is very, very hostile to Falun Gong, to put it mildly. So if they've arrested her friend and they know about her, so why doesn't that put her in danger if she's sent back? I don't understand.
Well, I think there's a couple of points there, Your Honor. One is there's the adverse credibility determination with respect to the lead petitioner on that, on the Falun Gong. But
what is that? What is the basis of that?
I think he felt like she was not truthful for 8 or 9 indices.
Well, I don't understand. I can't hear you very well.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What was incredible about her Falun Gong testimony?
I think he rejected her testimony.
What?
I think he rejected her entire
Why?
Testimony.
What was incredible about her Falun Gong testimony?
Well, he doesn't mention specifically any. He went through about 8 or 9 indicia of to support his adverse credibility determination. And I'm just going to move this up a little bit.
That really only records, doesn't amplify.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So you need to project a little
Speak
bit.
Up, yeah.
He went through about 8 or 9 different indicia to form the basis of his adverse credibility determination. None of those did he specifically focus on the Falun Gong aspect.
Well, where did he get the... He seems to think that Falun Gong... You remember Falun Gong? Well, they might bother you or they might not bother you. I don't think that's true. I think China is fiercely hostile to Falun Gong. They regard it as a criminal conspiracy.
But I think what
Isn't that true?
I think what he was...
Isn't that true? Or maybe you don't know. Maybe you don't know anything about Falun Gong.
It comes up...
Do you know anything about Falun Gong?
Yes, Your Honor. But,
what is China's policy about Falun Gong?
You know, I believe it's what the IJ said.
What is China's policy about Falun Gong?
I believe they consider it illegal.
Right.
Okay. But getting back to your original question, and that is...
But look what he said about credibility.
Uh-huh.
This court does not believe that the respondent has testified credibly concerning the practice of Falun Gong in China. This court finds that simply alleging that the authorities are looking for her because a friend was arrested is too tenuous and too speculative. Well, what does that have to do with credibility? I don't understand that.
I think he's saying that even...
What could she say? I mean, what could she say? She says... They know about her because of her friend. Well, they know about her, and if she goes back, there's certainly a danger that they'll arrest her.
I think he's saying that even if you were to find her credible on that piece of testimony, that the fact that a friend had been arrested 2 years prior, that she was essentially there are no incidents.
She testified that they know about her, that they were looking for her,
and that she had. But she had experienced no type of persecution
well,
based on
find
that.
Her. When she goes back, you know, on the plane with some deported from the United States, they'll look in their records and maybe they say, yeah, we were looking for her. We never found her, but now we've got her.
I think the judge found that insufficient.
Well, why? What more would you need?
I think you'd have to find some incidents of specific persecution targeted at her.
I understand. Suppose you're a member of Falun Gong. Suppose they're looking for you. You're wanted. They post your picture in their post offices, you know, wanted, Miss Zhao. But they can't find her because she's hiding. Well, wouldn't she have a well-founded fear of persecution if she were sent back?
Well, Your Honor,
if they're looking for her, wouldn't they?
Those
in my case, wouldn't they, or no?
Well, Your Honor.
In my case, would they or not? Would she or not have a well-founded fear of persecution?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
She's one of the 10 most wanted, but still no well-founded fear of persecution.
I think you'd have to. I think you'd have to.
Is your position?
I think you'd have to.
Your position?
Your Honor, I think.
No, answer me. I mean, is that your position?
Your Honor.
You better answer yes or no.
Well, Your Honor.
Yes or no.
If those.
Yes or no.
I'm going to answer.
Yes or no.
If those are.
Yes or no.
Your Honor.
Yes or no.
I don't believe.
If I ask a yes or no question, I want an answer.
But I'm not the Attorney General. I don't decide that.
I'm asking your opinion.
My opinion is no.
Good.
But those facts need to be presented to the Attorney General.
Now, is it your view that she had a voluntary abortion, no abortion, an involuntary abortion, or what?
Your Honor, she was found not credible on her.
Would you answer my question directly? What is your view? She had an abortion, she didn't have an abortion, it was voluntary, it was involuntary?
Well, certainly the abortion certificate that she presented suggests that if we can believe that document, that she had an abortion, but that was not involuntary. Do I believe the document? Frankly, no, Your Honor. But
oh, so you don't think she had an abortion at all?
This was kind of an after-the-fact document that was, provided, for purposes of this proceeding. And I think it was...
Really? But it was used against her by the immigration judge. Now you're saying it's an inauthentic document.
Well, not...
The immigration judge used it to argue that her abortion was voluntary because he said they only give certificates if it's voluntary.
Yeah, I think
now you're saying it's a phony document.
Well, I don't believe it personally, but...
But the immigration judge did.
The immigration judge looked at it and said, the State Department report suggests that these are not generated, as she suggested, which was in the case of an involuntary abortion. And I do want to point out that the Seventh Circuit has recognized that interpretation in the Huang case. Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's unlikely that someone like this woman would be embarrassed to mention that she had an abortion because she'd become pregnant by her boyfriend? She wasn't married, and it's illegal, and so on. Do you think it's plausible that she might be embarrassed to mention that to when she first shows up in the United States? Mention that to a U.S. officer.
Your Honor, I'm going to answer your question directly because that's what you've been insisting on, and I think it's plausible. But having said that, it's incumbent upon her to make her claim at that time. Now, if she does not make that claim and she presents a different story later on, and keep in mind that she also had the assistance of counsel at this point, if she has these two different stories or different stories and the immigration judge.
She had a lawyer for her credible fear.
Yeah, she did consult. And with respect to there being two different stories out there and the immigration judge just saying that, well, that's a basis for an adverse credibility finding, these cases rise and fall on the substantial evidence standard. And if given those facts, I think it would be hard to say that a contrary conclusion is compelling. In other words, when he sees two different stories, how can
we
say
that? I think you're probably right about the abortion business, but the Falun Gong bothers me because the immigration judge didn't seem to have any clear idea of the Chinese government's hostility to Falun Gong, and I don't know what there was about credibility I don't know what more she could have said about that.
Mr. Meyer, isn't it true that The IJ relied on the fact that for 2 years she was in a nearby village with no suggestion that she was hiding there?
I think he relied on the fact that, yeah, for 2 years after this friend is arrested, she has no other incidents with police that would suggest
persecution. Did she testify at all to her, the degree of her involvement, or she just talked about Falun Gong the way people might broadly suggest they belong to X church or Y organization?
There's very little on the record to support a Falun Gong.
The extent of her practice or the regularity, or other than she had a friend who was arrested.
Right.
Do you have anything in that?
She alleges she started this practice after 98 and that she was practicing and she was introduced to it by this friend.
Did she talk at all about any venue where she practiced this?
Not that I'm remembering. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Meyer. So, Mr. Maslany, your time expired, but we'll give you a minute if you'd like.
Judge, first off, I want to discuss the thing about having a lawyer present at the credible fear interview. Actually, the government states in the record, and if you follow the timeline, she has an airport statement at MIA where there is no lawyer present. Then the credible fear interview happens. It appears to be 3 to 4 days later. And it's not actually having a lawyer present. It's having consulted with a lawyer. So apparently having consulted with a lawyer and having a credible fear interview 3 to 4 days after your entry into the United States at MIA would somehow make someone feel less embarrassed about the fact that they had had a child out of wedlock and a forced abortion. Somehow the lawyer would have cured it. I've consulted with a lot of people as a lawyer. I don't think I've changed a whole lot of people's mind in the course of 3 to 4 days. Maybe I have, but I wouldn't know about it. Talking about Falun Gong, we are talking about, there were some other issues regarding Falun Gong. One of them is that the family had not been harmed. There was family safety. However, there's no evidence in the record that the family had anything to do whatsoever with Falun Gong. Regarding the 2 years, there is evidence that she had been in hiding, and there was a letter of a mother saying that the authorities were coming to look for her. So there is an issue regarding a well-founded fear in this case regarding that.
Did the immigration judge mention about the hiding business?
I believe yes, he did. He mentioned. I don't think the board really mentioned it. I think the immigration judge and the board both mainly concentrated on family planning and kind of speculated that, gee, if the government could have found her so quickly for an abortion, therefore they should have found her quickly for Falun Gong. They didn't exactly say that, but it seems like that's what's running through his mind. And he's wondering if she's in hiding somewhere an hour and a half away. In fact, I think that's what the immigration judge said. She was in hiding an hour and a half away, that it wasn't really that far. And, you know, the authorities, unless they were, he's implying that unless they were incompetent, they should have discovered someone an hour and a half away. I think that's based on speculation. I think the part about they should have discovered an hour and a half.
We've suggested that if you're going to make such a showing, you got to have specific, detailed facts showing good reason to fear she'll be singled out for persecution.
Correct.
Now, other than the alleged membership, that's why I'm trying to focus on: could she have presented anything about, other than I have a friend who was arrested, and clearly with China's policy toward this group, that's not probably hard to establish. But what was about her, other than she moved an hour or so away?
Well, there's a mother's letter saying that people are looking for, I believe, based on Falun Gong. That's why the authorities are looking for, based on her practice of Falun Gong. With Falun Gong, you're not going to get a lot of documentary evidence. It's not like...
Based on her practice, not her friendship.
You're not going to get much documentation of any kind of practice.
But they're looking for her because she's a member, not just because she's a friend of someone who was a member.
Why would they be looking for her if they were really interested in her friend? They're looking for her because of her practice of Falun Gong. They have the friend.
They have
arrested the friend, but the mother says they're looking for her practice of Falun Gong.
Let me ask you this. When she arrives at the airport, she has a phony... passport, different picture, different name.
Correct. It's a fraud photo switch entry.
Right. So that, and then she's asked about these things, and she never mentions the abortion thing, which is a key claim that she makes later on. Why isn't the minute? You know, there's a lot of these cases, and you go through this initial airport interview, and then 3 days later you have this credible fear interview, and you have a hearing before an immigration judge. And the judge is actually sitting there listening to and looking at and I assume paying attention to what's going on, and why isn't he able to smell a rat? And you know, I'm not saying she is or is not, but that's credibility determinations are ones that are pretty much for the trier of fact.
But under the Huang case, which I've cited to Your Honors before, and the government cites, the Huang case, as well as every other circuit I've ever seen, requires specific and cogent reasons to be laid out. You can't simply
smell a rat. Well, but when you lie to get in, with you, just with the false documents, pictures. And
that's
stuff.
Consistent with escaping from persecution. False
documents. No, it isn't. It's when you arrive and you say, look, this is not me. That's different, but that's not what happened here.
In addition to that, there is already an issue regarding simply the issue, the use of the fraudulent document. Let's say, for example, I'm not making a comment about what Your Honors are going to do, that Your Honors were to reverse this and eventually somewhere down the line should be granted asylum. If she were to ask to become a permanent resident of the United States a year and a day after that happened, she would be prevented from doing that without a waiver because she entered and apparently conceded, from what I can see in the record, that she entered by use of fraud. Now, notice that the immigration judge didn't use the use of the photo switch passport. And, you know, there is some vague mention in the government's brief of some other counterfeit document. I think it was used by the husband. But none of this went into the immigration judge's decision. None of it went into the board's decision. And we're at least limited to those two things. I mean, we're not here to fact find. That's the issue here.
Judge Evans' question about credibility. Was she testifying in English or through a translator?
Through a translator.
She had a translator at the your hearing.
That's correct. The government mentions it in their brief.
There's never been a claim here that there was some sort of inadequacies.
A misunderstanding? No, Judge.
Okay.
No, Judge. In fact, to look at the case in the record, she entirely claims
But the judge was not actually listening to her. He was listening to a translator.
Correct.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Muslimi, and thank you, Mr. Meyer.
Your Honors, if I may at least say, it is a distinct honor for me to appear before the court. This is my first appearance, and for a Florida attorney, it means a lot. I thank all of you for allowing me to appear here. I know it was short notice.
Well, we really appreciate your coming up from Miami, and you gave an excellent argument, so thank you very much.
Thank you.